At Her Spirit, we're here for you. We want to help you discover your potential, achieve your goals, ignite your fitness, find your community. Head to herspirit.co.uk and sign up for our core membership. Get access to our virtual classes, monthly challenges, expert advice, and track your progress in our health hub. You'll also find your very own cheerleading squad who will support you every step of the way. Use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 and get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
Welcome to the latest edition of the Her Spirit podcast with me, Louise Minchin, and Annie Emerson. Today we have a double whammy for you. First, we're going to be talking to Deborah James. You might know her as Bowel Babe. She's a former head teacher, now cancer campaigner and award-winning podcaster. And then we'll also hear from Lucy Gossage, who's managed to be a multiple Ironman winner at the same time as working as an oncologist. Two wonderful, strong, inspiring women. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Her Spirit podcast with Annie Emerson. Hi, Annie, how are you?
Very well, thanks. How are you, Louise? Actually, like, the sunshine is kind of making this process so easy at the moment, isn't it? I don't know what's going to happen when the apparent snow is going to arrive on Sunday.
We are recording our lovely Her Spirit podcast, and what we'll do every time we record it, we'll kind of give you an indication of when it's recorded so that you can judge that, because things are changing so quickly at the moment, aren't they, Annie?
Just every day there's something new. And I've just picked up on the news this morning that Boris Johnson has tested positive as well for coronavirus. And I just think I think at the moment we have simply to take it day by day, because everything is changing literally hour by hour.
So there you know where we are. You know when we're recording. And we're recording today with one of our top friends, Deborah James. And I can see Deborah sitting in her house in the sunshine as well in London. It's lovely to see you. I know I'm not with you, but it is wonderful to just catch an eye, be able to see your smiley face.
Oh, it's so wonderful to see you guys. It's kind of like I'm with you anyway. I love it. I love it.
And we met last year because Annie and I did a podcast called The Tripod, and we asked you if you would do your first triathlon, and we kind of trained you through it. Before we talk about that, let's talk a little bit more about you, because people will know you as well as Bowel Babe. So you are, as well as being an awesome person, a cancer campaigner, and there's a really good reason why. For people who don't know you, do you want to explain a little bit about why this happened?
Absolutely. So I have lived for 3 years with metastatic bowel cancer, and I use that phrase, living with cancer. So I was diagnosed at the age of 35, and I very much have undergone loads and loads of operations, a bowel resection, lung resection. I don't need to list them off as a cancer CV. But essentially, exercise has been a huge part of me just mentally and physically coping with all the challenges that have been thrown at me. Recently, I got some great news that I was in a place I never, ever, ever thought possible, which was actually going back from having 15 tumours in my body to actually having no evidence of cancer, which is a little bit bonkers. And I remember speaking to yourself, Louise, about this as soon as it happened, and I was blown away by the support and the kind of outpouring of love. And for me, I was a deputy head teacher, so it was a natural fit for me to just talk about what cancer looks like in terms of living with cancer, because I think it's lifting that veil in terms of, with one and two of us getting cancer in our lifetime, I think we assume that we can't continue our normal lives. And it is a challenge, but things like taking on a triathlon when you're knee deep in the middle of chemo treatment, there's nothing like a challenge. And even en route, I remember having to have operations thrown at me left, right and centre. But I still got in the water. I still got in the water because of you guys, which is amazing.
Just going back there, Debs, to your career as a head teacher, you were a little bit more than that. Because I remember when I first met you and finding out what you were doing, and you were in no ordinary school. You were called in as a crisis team in a school in special measures. Not a nice private school, not a little primary school, a big college. swamp with a huge amount of problems. And I think that's the side, you know, you are such a celeb, you are so glamorous, but I think that's the side of people that don't know you, this, you know, intensely driven and intelligent person. Not saying that you don't come across intelligent, but you know what I mean. I was blown away, you know, with the work that you were doing within education before your diagnosis.
Oh, thank you so much. I think for me, what I've realised even 3 years on is that I'm passionate about education, whatever that looks like. I think once a teacher, always a teacher. And yeah, you're right. I was working in a school that was in special measures. I've been crash teamed in. It's kind of what I did as part of my job, and I absolutely loved it. And I find myself actually right now, we're obviously recording in the time of Corona, and I found myself, just to distract and keep myself busy at home, I set up a little Instagram grid school to tell parents they're doing an okay job. It's all fine. And taking me back to the idea of what it's like to actually teach again, which is amazing. And it's a good distraction away from cancer.
Honestly, you're absolutely brilliant. We've had loads of questions in for you. I only put like a message out there like a couple of hours ago. Amy C says, hey, how are you keeping yourself motivated to stay fit and healthy in this very surreal time? Are you sticking to a set structure every day or just going with the flow?
Good question. So for me, exercise has always been a massive part of my life, and now even more so than ever. So whilst I'm obviously high risk because I'm still on some form of treatment, even though I don't have disease in my body, I still am on maintenance treatment, and that maintenance treatment is targeted therapy. So obviously my immune system can get a little bit affected. Actually, exercise, I've been told by my medical team that for me, to improve my lung capacity, running improves my lung capacity. It's the only way that I've got over some of my stuff. So actually I'm finding now more than ever I need that exercise. And I find for me, I'm a morning exercise kind of girl, like not very early in the morning, but I get up and obviously within social distancing, I will do a run, whatever that looks like, maybe a 5k run or a 10k run, slowly. It's all about getting your trainers on, getting fresh air, getting out there. I've just got myself a bike, so I'm jumping on the kind of bike at home, the exercise bike at home. But I do have a routine. The routine is very much kind of like do some form of exercise, whether that's for half an hour or an hour every day at the moment, whatever it looks like. It just makes me feel better personally.
You've got to join us on the bike, because I did a Her Spirit bike session last night, which was, it was good because we were all doing it in our own rooms, you know, beds, wherever, bedrooms, bathrooms, not bathrooms probably, but wherever we were. And actually you can cheat, you can go really, you don't have to put in all the effort if you don't want to. But what was brilliant about it was like coaching tips, you know, you don't have that. I've never really had those, Annie. It was brilliant. So Deborah, please join us on that.
Just to go back to what Deborah was saying there about training early, I definitely, and I'm not great first thing in the morning either, but I have found when I go, I'll do it later, it doesn't happen. Even if it's like you've given yourself that challenge of a 10-minute Joe Wicks, you know, workout, or you're touching on, you know, one of the brilliant classes that we've got going on Her Spirit, you know, it's, you've got to get it done early, because if you don't, the day slips by and you get to the end of the day.
Okay. I'm going to speak for the other people at the end of the day. I mean, you think that I'd be a morning person, but there'll be lots of people I think who go, you two are crazy. I like leaving it till like 6 o'clock in the evening. I don't mind. And the sun's out, so it's easier.
But the difference is, Lou, the difference is your girls are big girls. So us guys, so Deborah and I have got children that are quite similar ages. And I think it just doesn't happen when you get to the end of the day with young kids.
I want to talk to you both about how you're coping with the children at home, because as you say, mine are 18 and 15, so they're really self-sufficient. Talk about isolation though, Deborah, because you know, we're all pretty new to this, but you've been doing it for a while, haven't you?
So isolation, I've been doing it for a while, actually. I chose to take my kids out of school around 3 weeks ago, simply because I knew that I was slightly higher risk. And therefore, I just felt I wanted to kind of lock down as a family. I still do my daily exercise, but beyond that, my husband goes to the shops. It's not been as bad as I thought so far, but I'm now in my fourth week. I think it's going to get worse at some point. I'm sure I will hit a brick wall. But to be honest, in times of crisis, actually, I just want my family around. And I feel very lucky and very privileged that we have the opportunity to do that, because there's so many people out on the front line who don't have the choice. But whilst we have the choice, we have to stay in for each other.
And I guess, you know, it is, I've got local friends around here who are being set 6 hours a day work from school. And I'm like, whoa, that is not going to work because, you know, a lot of parents, both parents are working from home. And I've heard a few messages out there saying, do you know what? Give the kids a good time because at the end of the day, this will pass. They want memories of having fun. Listen, it's Liberty Hall in this house, okay? As long as we tick off a few little half an hours here of spelling and times table. I'm on the trampoline. I'm doing cartwheels in the garden. And it's freaking hilarious because I just hadn't realized how inflexible I'd become, you know, and we're playing games and we're doing stuff. And I just think, oh, my God, like I feel so sorry for the parents that are piling so much pressure. And actually, Deborah, you know, you coming from education, I just, you know, wonder what your thoughts are on that.
It's really hard as a parent, isn't it, when you've got your kids at home to recognise that actually not all learning takes place behind a desk with a piece of paper. And it's so hard as a parent to stop being kind of like, right, sit at your desk, do hours and hours of work. What you've got to remember is if you compare it to school, so in a school setting, obviously you have a good morning break and you have lunch. I'm not saying you don't do anything, you do work really hard. But those lessons, you're in a class with 30 people, and the attention that that teacher is giving is as much as possibly they can do. But if you divide up an hour lesson, really it's only 2 minutes individual attention, and obviously you're set off to work. So when parents are really worried that their kids are you know, they're not giving their kids enough attention, try and calculate how much individual attention that child is getting in a school setting. And I guarantee you that you are doing more at home already. And it is that balance. Learning happens when we're most engaged, when we're feeling relaxed, when we're feeling secure in that environment, and we're really interested in it. And that can come in so many different ways. And just read. The best thing we can do is get our kids to read every day. I say double your age. So if you've got 10-year-olds, get them to read for 20 minutes. It sometimes works.
You both talked about similar things, actually, but also I'm interested in what you say, Annie, and also your take on it, Deborah, about, you know, exercise and moving and, you know, keeping, you know, we know that lots of people are doing all sorts of things. That's going to be really important in the next few weeks, isn't it, Deborah?
At Her Spirit, we know how powerful women can be. We love your strength, your determination, your compassion. We love the energy that sparks when we connect and spur each other on. Her Spirit was created to ignite that flame of determination, to unleash your energy, to build your self-belief, and to help every woman find a way to your healthiest mind, body, and soul yet. We want to inspire 1 million women just like you to be active, healthy, and happy because you deserve it. Head to herspirit.co.uk, join our core membership and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. Join our monthly challenges, get access to the Her Spirit Health Hub and track your activity levels, mood, food, sleep and stress every single week with your own personalised dashboard. Get expert advice and join daily live classes that can be played back at any time. Plus, find the support that you need to get started and stay motivated. Just sign up at herspirit.co.uk and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
So exercise whilst we're at home is going to be key. It is for me. I speak really openly about how it's one of my mental tools. So I use it to keep myself positive. And I think having a routine, at least that involves getting dressed, doing some exercise every day, is really, really important. And it doesn't matter what that obviously we're allowed at the moment to go out once per day within social distancing guidelines to exercise. But obviously, if you don't feel safe to do so, don't. You can exercise from home so well. There's so many free apps available. There's so many free things. I've got my kids into Joe Wicks at the moment. So every day at 9 o'clock, I think he's teaching PE to the world. It's brilliant. dancing is exercise, even doing some of those, you know, complicated TikToks that me and my family are now getting really into. Actually, you realise that before you know it, you've done half an hour of kind of dancing and you're breaking a sweat. So yeah, having exercise every day, whatever it looks like, is key.
I think the Joe Wicks thing at the moment for kids is absolutely brilliant. You know, I think he suffered one or two criticisms, but I just think, God, how dare people? You know, it's amazing what he's doing. It's 9 till 9:30. You only need a really small space. And like you say, that sets them up. They've got to burn energy. They really have. Although, of course, with mine, energy creates energy. So once they've done that, then they're sort of like storming around the place like little lunatics. But that stretch. And the other thing is get a skipping rope. Go back to old fashioned stuff. It doesn't have to be fancy. And there are so many resources, you know, online for kids at the moment. It's incredible.
I love some old-fashioned games. On Grid School, which is the Instagram site that I set up with my mum to help people at the moment, we're actually doing a takeover this week with Gifford Circus, because actually a while back I learned how to juggle. I'm now actually this week learning the sticks. I've learned Diablo, lots of different things. You know what? These skills that I learned when I was 10 have bode me well in life. They are my party tricks. And I genuinely, the excitement that you feel when you know you can juggle is absolutely brilliant. So I highly recommend it. Go old school.
I just want to ask you something, both of you again, about adjusting expectations, because, you know, we're all having to every single day adjust expectations in a massive way. And we all have our own individual expectations that we had. Presumably, with what you've gone through, Deborah, you've had to do that continually for 3 years. So to the rest of us, what is your advice?
So in terms of adjusting to new expectations, I think I feel like I've become a bit of an expert to this because I've had to do it so many times. It's literally a feeling that the floor has been whipped from beneath your feet and you're thinking, what do I do now? My best piece of advice is literally to take one day at a time. I think as soon as you suddenly think, oh, it's 12 weeks ahead, I can't fathom that. I can't fathom the idea of June or July or the kids going back to school, maybe even in September. When you think like that, you think, how on earth am I going to get through the day? Just think about the day. Think about, you know, what is this day going to look like? How am I going to try to be happy? How am I going to get my exercise? What am I going to eat? And before you know it, actually, you get a lot of pleasure in becoming and living in the now. It's one of the hardest things that we can all do, is to live in the now. But right now in society, it's the only choice that we have.
I think that is like truly the best advice that anyone can take on board, just to take what you've just said and really believe it and feel it, because it's absolutely true. You know more than anyone. And, you know, just breaking it down day by day just makes it so much easier. You know, I mean, imagine you and me, you know, I mean, we've got lovely Lulu too, but she's got these, you know, big girls that are taking care of themselves, you know, with our sort of younger kids going, right, they're actually not going back to school until September. Ooh, swallow that one, you know. But if we take, you know, I'm going, oh my gosh, we've got to Friday already. We're nearly ticked 1 week with the kids off school and it doesn't feel bad. And actually, I feel like my week is so much longer because I've been able to enjoy stuff. Louise knows how much I kind of run around trying to pack, you know, a bit power mum, I guess. You know, I talk to her, I'm at the swimming pool. I talk to her, I'm at the ice rink, you know, I'm just all over the place. And I feel like I've packed so much more into this week because I've been able to breathe. And hopefully, you know, your advice of just taking it, you know, one day at a time, you know, if people can just take that on board, they can be a lot happier and deal with this a lot better.
Some very wise teenager said to me, I'm sorry to interrupt, some very wise teenager said to me yesterday, it's time for us all to reset. And I know it's really hard and people are in very difficult, as I say, different circumstances, but actually maybe it is a little bit, maybe we can look at some of the positives, Deborah, that is a time to kind of look at what our values are individually as families, etc. And then, you know, enjoy a little bit of slowness as long as you're not in a desperate situation. And then take a look at how we go forward, maybe, Deborah.
I think we have to find some positives in this situation. For me, I don't think I've ever cuddled my husband as much in the last week. I think that's a nice thing to say. I think enforcing ourselves to slow down is never a bad thing. I know that I run at 100 miles an hour and I think almost I need that external pressure to kind of slow down, watch a movie, take time for myself. And actually, recognizing that that might not be a bad thing for some of us. Learning new things that we've always had on our to-do list, but we've never had the time. Well, we've got the time. Let's do it now. So let's try and find the positives in this situation.
I'm just going to ask you both a couple of questions. So Sarah W says, what new things have you done since the stay-at-home regime was enforced? And Deborah, you're hugging your husband more. Anything else?
Since the stay-at-home regime, I've had to do a lot more cooking. And it's not, I do actually quite enjoy cooking, but I just never have the time. And funny enough, I now have the time. So I'm just like smashing it through Jamie Oliver's recipes at the moment, making up some of my own. Nothing fancy. I love canapés. So I'm somebody who could do a whole meal of canapés. I'll like muck up like the main dinner, but like I'm quite good at cocktails and canapés. So I think I should like stick to that. And I'm working my way through learning a different cocktail each day. Which is always fun.
Right. I said I was living a much more chilled life, and I promise you, I definitely am. The one thing I'm doing lots more is not saying no to my kids. Sorry, I haven't got time. No. Come on. They've been saying, come and play on the trampoline, mummy. I've been playing on the trampoline and I love it. I've been doing somersaults. I feel really giddy, but I kind of figure it must be a good thing to do. Cartwheels, I was really rubbish at, but I did used to be really good, but I didn't realize how bad I was. And Zoe's guiding me on that one. The other thing I'm doing, I am really fortunate that I have a second language, because I sort of half grew up in Spain. So I can't believe my kids are like, what are they, 11 and 8, and we haven't really pushed the Spanish thing. So we've been doing Duolingo every day, and it's been amazing, and the kids love it. So we're really working on their Spanish. And the last thing I'm doing is I'm teaching myself the piano. Zoe's got a, don't laugh, because I'm so musically inept, I cannot tell you. I'm tone deaf, I'm rubbish, but I hear that like learning a musical instrument is really good for you as you get a little bit older, you know, for the mind and exercising the brain. So I'm only on day two, but I'm going to give it a go. Ask me, I'll play something in a few weeks.
I'll look forward to that, Annie. I think the thing that I've done, which I've most enjoyed, is so I've kind of been on this mission for about 6 years now since I took up sport again. One of the reasons why I did it was to encourage my two daughters to do sport. And I've succeeded with one of them, with the 18-year-old, which is just brilliant. And she's just come back from a run now. So that's fantastic. And I've been working on the 15-year-old since she was 9. And now one of my most favourite things is we go in and we've got a room where we've kind of put down a couple of mats and we are doing classes together. We're doing strength and conditioning classes. We've done a yoga class. And that has been genuinely one of the most rewarding things that I've done since the new rules about where you can go. So I'm really pleased, and hopefully that's something we do going forward.
My body is as unstretchy as my musical talent is, basically.
You can do yoga as well on the Her Spirit app. Sophie does it on Sundays, I think at 10 a.m. if anybody wants to join in. And Deborah, we're going to run out of time. Well, we're not going to really run out of time, but people might get. Do you think I'll get bored of listening to us chat?
They'll get bored of me. It's okay. So, no offence. No offence.
They're never going to get bored.
I can chat for England. It's ridiculous.
All we need is, we'd be really well placed if we had some margaritas, wouldn't we? And Maggie T asked this of you, Deborah. She says, do you know, I think I've lost the ability to speak, by the way. But anyway, she's asked this question. She says, does your encounter with cancer, has it actually pushed you to make use of your full potential?
I would say that it's made me step outside of my comfort zone. So I would say both career-wise and personally, and to say yes to things that I didn't think, not that I didn't think I was capable of, but I just never thought I could do things. And you also realize how transferable skills are in so many different situations. And I think sometimes we isolate or lock ourselves into one pathway in life. So I'm not saying everyone give up your job and jump across, but at least be open that life isn't straightforward. And actually shaking things up can be quite a positive experience.
Deb, on that note, I think back immediately to Leeds Triathlon and supporting you. Yeah, on that first part, the bit that you absolutely dreaded, which was getting in the water. I don't think I have probably, Louise and I were both there with you. I don't think I've ever been so emotional or emotionally drained at the end of it as I was watching you get round that swim. I mean, you know, you weren't meant to be in that cold water. You know, the cold water was, you know, is not good, you know, for condition and your, the state you were in at that point last year. And you frigging got round that swim. I have no idea how. It was amazing. So I guess when you say, yeah, you challenge yourself so much more. And then Lou, do you remember how just utterly annoying she was on the bike and the run because she looked so bloody gorgeous?
Oh, you're so funny. But I remember just, I'm so proud of that because I still, to this day, you know, I hate swimming. I have to be really honest with you. It's a massive fear of mine, as you guys have seen. And obviously you were supporting me so much, so I just didn't have a choice. I had to do it for everyone. And, you know, I can't say that I've grown to love swimming. I think that would be an utter lie. But the thing that I did develop since the triathlon was actually realizing how much I enjoy being on the bike. Albeit I was very slow, but this morning I did the spinning. I'm really enjoying it, actually, just the idea of cycling. So maybe a duathlon for me. I don't know. Maybe that could be a good challenge when we all come out of this.
Yeah, so when we all come out of this, there are lots of people I know in Her Spirit who've signed up for Leeds and London Tri this year. And goodness knows if, when, how they will eventually happen. I know it's really can be really intimidating for people. There's so many millions of things to worry about. What would you say to them if they're concerned about it?
Do it. I think there's so much support, and you guys know this, at all levels. I think I was somebody who would have been, well, always assumed it was only ever for very fit people, total professionals like yourselves. But actually, the reality is if you do a go try event, or if you do something at an entry level, or even not, there's people who will help you. I had people helping, as you guys know, to put my bike up. I literally did not know what to expect. And there's a lot of organisation, which obviously we talked about in the podcast that we did together before. But there's help there. And it feels like a massive achievement. Like, I've said yes to the London Marathon this year, although now it's being bumped. And I am, you know, incredibly excited about doing that. But I will never forget doing the first triathlon, because I think for me, getting over that hurdle of all the organisation of just getting in the water is such a huge achievement for me, more so than running probably any race that I will ever run.
And anybody who knows Annie will know that she's hard as nails, and she cried like a baby watching you, Deborah.
Do you know what? I am someone, I am really hard, you know, in certain ways. Like with my kids, I'm like, come on, get up, you can get on with it. But I do have a terrible emotional side. And I have to say, you know, watching you that day, you know, Lou's absolutely right. I lost it. We were so proud of you, honestly.
Now, listen, we're going to have to end our conversation shortly, but it's lovely to see you near the sunshine. And what you've done reminded me, Deborah, that, of course, the London Marathon may be temporarily postponed, but there is a date for it. And you, myself and Annie, we're all meant to be doing it.
I know. Yay! I can't wait. The problem is for me. Oh, this is, see, I was okay to say yes for April. You know, I could do that for, I could do 4 months in advance. Now I'm like, I've got to live till October. I still have to be fit. You know, it's just like the ante has just upped so much for somebody like me. But anyway, I still plan to be there. You know, we can do it. We can do it together. Not do it together. I mean, you guys can like run it and then come back and run it again with me. I mean, it's probably still only be rubbish. A mile one.
But you know, I had the exact opposite when they told me. I mean, it's terrible, this, isn't it? But when they told me it being, you know, because I kind of guessed it was going to be postponed, and when it was, I was like, yay, because I was so tired after Namibia.
You had such good reason to be celebrating. I mean, after your adventures in Namibia and what you put yourself through, you know.
I genuinely think you're right. A marathon in the desert, shortly followed by the London Marathon, actually could have been too much for me. Oh, and somebody sent me a question about that. They said, this is from Jess. Thank you, Jess. Hey, Louise, do you think you've ever reached or come close to your limits? Yes, I have come very close to my limits on the 19th sand dune and the marathon in the Namibian desert.
Oh, my word. Did you enjoy it at all?
Yeah, you know me. I absolutely loved it.
I was like, I didn't even need to ask that question.
Anyway, on that note, it's just such a joy to see you and spend a bit of time with you, Deborah. Thank you so much. Oh, absolutely wonderful.
It's lovely to see
you. And we wish you the best of luck. And we'll see you.
We'll see you soon. We'll see you soon.
Oh, Annie, that was lovely to speak to Deborah, wasn't it?
Oh, it was so fab. Oh my God, I have not seen her. Well, she's kind of always, the way I describe her is mad and chilled at the same time, because she always seems remarkably unstressed, but she's always running around at 100 miles an hour. And it's almost like she's such an it girl now, isn't she? She's like, she's so cool. And to see her that well, I know she was, you know, pretty worried a couple of weeks ago, and she was worried that not enough was being done to, you know, particularly because she's, you know, very vulnerable. But I think she seemed in a really chill place. And she looked gorgeous too, didn't she? She always does, but she looked particularly gorgeous today.
I particularly wanted to pick up quite a few of the thoughts that she had, and general thoughts actually, with another really, well, I'm going to count her as a friend of mine anyway. I'm looking at her face thinking, what would she say about that? She's absolutely brilliant. She's an oncologist. She also started 5K Your Way, Move Against Cancer. She is an incredible triathlete, Ironman. How many have you won, Lucy Gossage?
Oh, I think 12 proper ones and a couple of others.
Lucy, we're really lucky to speak to you. And I say lucky because we are in extraordinary circumstances, but because of what's happening, you are not able to go on your holiday, so you can talk to us, which is amazing. So first of all, Lucy, what do you make of what's going on, and how worried are you?
I'm not going to lie. I'm very worried, and I have been for about the last month or so. And despite that, it still all happened very, very quickly. I am worried, but I think that I can see your husband in the background. I can't not say hello to him.
Of course you can say hello.
Hello, sorry, husband
everybody.
Dave.
This is my husband, David, who Lucy knows because, as I said, we've been racing in the same races together.
And we have the same birthday.
Oh, Christmas Day.
Christmas Day.
No
anyway,
way.
Sorry. Yes, I am very worried, but I do think there will be some positives that come out of it. And actually, I think we're seeing them anyway, you know, in the NHS, everyone is really pulling together. And even now, I think you can see, you know, you go out for your run and everyone's appreciating the small things in life. It helps that it's been sunny this week. But I think maybe this kind of forced press pause for us all and being out of our comfort zones might all make us reevaluate life. So, I'm very scared, but I do think there will be some positives when we come out the other side.
And that's really interesting, wasn't it, Annie? Because that's very much what Deborah and you and I were talking about.
Yeah. So I guess, Lucy, you know, we're sort of going out to, you know, so many women out there and some men, as I found out today on social media, who've been listening to the podcast. You know, you are, you know, a highly experienced trained doctor, you know, in oncology and lots of other things too. In terms of sport right now, you know, how important do you think it is for everyone out there just to be trying to maintain some sort of exercise, regular exercise from day to day?
Oh, I think it's enormously important. And I'm so glad that the government have, I think, taken a sensible approach to this lockdown. I was very worried that they'd stop people going outside completely other than going to the supermarket. And I think all that would do would be make everyone go to the supermarket every day just to get out of their house. And that's far more risky in terms of spreading the virus, I think, than going out for a run or a bike ride or whatever on your own. I think it's absolutely, I mean, it's fundamental to for everyone's mental health to get out of the house whilst we can. And, you know, that it's very easy. Yeah, I woke up this morning and I was just having a low day and feeling very lethargic, and I didn't really feel like going on a run. But well, as soon as you get outside, you can just look at life a bit differently. I know for a lot of my patients, they're advised not to get outside, and I think that's a whole new level of challenge, being stuck inside for 12 weeks. But I think even making the effort to do yoga or some kind of indoor exercise classes, and we're trying to, with 5K Your Way, we're trying to provide some kind of different ways for people to exercise and keep that community spirit going. So yeah, I think, and you know, it could be one of the positives, but actually everyone's got time now. No one's got an excuse not to exercise. And it frustrates you so much that my dad, who's now taken out 2 hours of commuting, is still really struggling to get to do something. And I just hope that he uses the next 3 months or however long it is to incorporate activity as a routine into his life.
There's a real sense as well, because when I talked to you just before I asked you to come on this podcast, that you were all thinking a little bit more carefully about sort of spending our one exercise a day carefully as well, aren't we? It's a completely different way of looking at things.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's two sides of it. So I normally train more than once a day. So I'm finding it quite hard just being able to get, particularly because I'm on holiday and I'm planning, you know, to have a lovely time in the Canary Islands. So I'm finding that quite hard. But actually, I think the other side of the coin is people are now, who perhaps wouldn't normally exercise, have got this time and they're taking the opportunity to exercise. And it's so nice seeing people out there walking or running or, you know, out on their bikes. And I do think at the end of this, people might become more active, because, you know, when you're only allowed to do something once, it suddenly feels like you want to do it. Whereas if you have to do something once, it feels like you don't want to.
And I think to touch on the note there that you made about some people can't go outside, you know, Deborah told us that she's kind of going out really early in the morning. And yes, she is high risk, but, you know, she's in obviously a very good place at the moment. But you can do stuff inside, as we found out, we'll be finding out with her spirit app and these brilliant yoga classes that are happening, the bike class that happened yesterday. Okay, not everyone has a turbo trainer or a watt bike at home, but in terms of yoga classes and stuff like that, there is stuff that you can do at home in very small spaces, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, there are lots of communities are springing up. So Cambridge Triathlon Club tomorrow is doing their swim session through Zoom. And obviously it's not a swim session, but they're getting, and they've invited me back as I used to train with them. They're, you know, they're getting everyone together on Zoom and everyone's going to do the same exercises, specified, you know, swimming training exercises. So that's really cool. And I, you know, on Zwift, a lot of people are starting to use kind of virtual training worlds and linking together. And Tom, the guy that I live with, he's, you know, yesterday he did a race with some friends and he was like, oh, it was my little social bit. And there were loads and loads of group yoga classes, 5K Your Way. We're doing a session tomorrow, and then we've got a live Q&A on next Wednesday, I think. And yeah, so there were lots of innovative ways coming out for people to, I think the social interaction is as important probably as the physical interaction. And I think that might change the world in the long run.
In what way, Lucy? Do you think we'll be more aware of each other, or what do you think?
I think we're all reaching out to each other more, aren't we? And I think that's a positive. I think you realise straight away who matters to you in your life, and you probably tell them. And I, in some ways, it's, you know, I don't want to, but I see it quite often at work when people are told that they've got a cancer. They have this kind of 2 week, 3 week period whilst they're being diagnosed, and everything just goes out of control and they don't know how to deal with it. And then they adjust to what they've been told. They get to grips with what the treatment might be. We don't know where we're going to be in 3 months' time, 6 months' time. You know, a lot of ladies who are having breast cancer treatment might not know where they'll be in 6 months' time, but you kind of go through that process. And actually at the other side, if you're lucky enough to come out the other side and you know, you don't need any more treatment, then a lot of people reevaluate their lives and they come out clearer about what they want for life, from life, and make positive changes. And actually, I think this is happening to everyone in the world at the moment. And that's why I do think there could be some positives at the end of it.
Deborah talked really movingly, Lucy, about the fact that she was hugging her husband more. And if, you know, she's had some really bad news over lots of different, you know, a long period of time, and said that, you know, if she had wished for anything, it would actually be to be at home with her family. Yeah. And lots of us think about that, don't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think it's when something's forced upon you, it's very hard to see the positives initially. But when you come to terms with it, maybe that is when you can see the positives. And, you know, my mum's got my sister and my sister's two little girls living with her for the summer. And there's been a process of adjustment. But actually, mum's going to have however long with her two little grandchildren. And that's a huge opportunity. And, yeah, I think families are definitely coming closer. I mean, I guess the caveat is that we are also lucky. You know, I'm sitting in a nice house. I've got a garden. I'm not going to be stuck away because I'm going to be going back into work. I think we're very privileged living middle class lives. And there are a lot of people who are, you know, in far less fortunate positions. And it's very easy for me to say, yeah, it'll be fine. But for not for everybody.
I think that's what I'm waking up and feeling, that we are particularly privileged, you know, and it's, I know it's a bit kind of cheesy, but that thing to wake up in the morning and go, okay, what am I grateful for today? You know, I've got a roof over my head, number one. I've got some food, you know, we were talking about sort of like supermarkets and stuff. I'm loving going to like the local shops and supporting like the smaller businesses right now, because the behavior in some of the big supermarkets has just been kind of a bit out of control. And I'm really happy to support, you know, the smaller businesses out there. And the other thing as well, I don't know if you agree, I think both of you two, is that it's almost like we're sort of rising above it, going, go and throw it at us, because whatever you throw at us, we are just going to kind of take one step ahead of you in terms of the virus. Because initially everyone thought, God, what the hell are we going to do? But every day we are all finding new things to do.
So I think I see this at work, and so often, particularly when I was a pro triathlete and I, you know, I didn't want to go and do my run after work. And all I'd do is think of someone that I'd seen that day in the hospital who would have loved to have been able to go outside and do a run. And yeah, whenever I, you know, I think a lot of us feel guilty for, you know, obviously I would have liked to have been on my holiday. People would have liked to be doing their Ironmans or their marathons. And there probably is quite a lot of guilt for feeling disappointed about what on pay, you know, what now is really so unimportant. But I do feel so desperately sad for some of my patients and so many people with cancer who are in, you know, very difficult situations and who, you know, I don't know, you know, nobody knows what the other side is going to look like for them. And I think that's what is probably making me most upset at the moment about the whole situation.
And I don't want to make it in any way more difficult for you, but yes, there's a reality that is not, that very few of us thankfully have to be facing at the moment, where, you know, different decisions may have to be taken, presumably as well.
In terms of treatments, definitely. And I think with the NHS, we just don't know how bad it's going to be in terms of capacity. So for people on treatment, you know, oncologists are, and everyone treating people with cancer, they're an incredible bunch of people, and they are all people that go the extra mile. And I think anyone with cancer should feel very comfortable that they will get the best care. But there are some difficult decisions, because the risk of these treatments, we think, it means that the risk of coronavirus is much higher for people on treatments. We don't know how bad the NHS is going to get with capacity and things. And I think it's good. I mean, oncology is, you know, I'm going back to work next week to a very different world to the one I left 2 weeks ago. And I know that from just talking to oncologists and seeing all the emails and things.
What's really striking as well is the kind of, it's the affection and love with which you treat your patients. And that's so widespread. And it was lovely to stand out in our tiny little village last night and hear people clapping and shouting. Did you hear that?
I didn't, actually. I didn't. I would have felt a bit embarrassed going out on the street anyway. So particularly because I've been on holiday this week, I would have felt a complete fraud.
But, there's so much. I know, you know, there's a real sense. Hopefully you'll get the sense that, you know, we're all so grateful as well. I want to ask you a question that's kind of about the side of psychological side. This is from Mel, who sent it through her spirit. She says she works with young athletes who will hopefully be reaching elite status. In the last few weeks, some have lost their exams, their ability to finish school, see their friends, lost the place they train in. She wants to psychologically ensure that as young mid-late teen athletes, they're equipped to deal with such drastic changes. And you also deal with junk teenagers as well, don't you, Lucy?
Yeah, I do. So I train with a bunch of teenagers, and my youngest patients are 17. But I think actually for well teenagers who don't have health problems, this is a great opportunity to learn how to deal with resilience. And I think it is an opportunity to understand your why is about sport, and are you doing it for the right reasons, or are you doing it just because your parents have made you do it, or because you've always done it? And I think it, you know, again, that might open people's eyes as to whether they really want to pursue this sports career or not. So, it doesn't make it easy right now, but they're going to come out much more resilient at the end of it.
Lucy, you just mentioned there that, people finding out, learning a lot more about themselves, why they've got into sport, or, you know, what's the reason for them being in it. I think so our listeners understand a little bit more about you is why you got into Ironman. And I think it's such a brilliant story. Didn't it start somewhere in a nightclub about a boyfriend or not a boyfriend? I'll do an Ironman if I leave this club with a boy or something like that. I'm probably saying it all wrong. But I remember having
not,
a chat.
Not quite that way, but...
Okay, you tell the story.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. I'll do it if I leave with boy. It was a drunken dare. And then I'd heard about it. This thing called Ironman. I thought it was impossible. Some medical students had told me about it actually. And then I got very drunk and I said, if I'm single on New Year's Day, I'll do an Ironman. On New Year's Eve, I'll do an Ironman. New Year's Day, I'll do an Ironman. And then New Year's Eve, I met a guy who'd done an Ironman, and that was fate. And that was how it all started. So it was a drink and dare.
I knew it was along those sort of lines somewhere.
So when did you realise that you liked doing this extreme exercise, Lucy?
It was funny because when I did the first one, I actually found at my parents' house, they bought a box of stuff over a week or so ago, my old training diary. So I didn't have, and it's just a diary, and it was things like 1 hour exercise bike, 1 hour doubles tennis. That was the kind of way that I got around the first time. So I didn't have a clue what I was doing, and I wasn't part of a club or anything. And I did the race, and I genuinely thought it was impossible. And, it was a one-off. It was just a challenge. And I did it, and I exceeded all my expectations, and I was so proud. And I'd achieved the impossible. And then it was maybe a few weeks after. And I thought, well, actually, I did quite miss riding my bike and kind of doing the running and things, because I'd gone back to work and just, you know, started doing what I normally do and go on the cross train and then go to the pub. And so that was when I then joined a club, and actually the club was the thing that made me fall in love with it, because it was just such a sociable club, and we'd go swimming and then we'd go to the pub for a pint afterwards, and they were all people who weren't doctors, and it was just took me a lot of courage to, in fact, I would only go to the club if a guy that I worked with was going, because I was so nervous about turning up on my own and talking to all these like hardcore athletes and things. But it was the club that really made me fall in love with it.
And I think that anyone who's watched you race, and for anyone tuning in for the first time and trying to understand, you know, what triathlon is all about. Yes, it is tough, but we've talked about it being very accessible for a lot of people. Maybe they don't want to be quite as crazy as you are, in a wonderful sense of the, you know, what crazy is kind of thing, but because there are so many different distances. But somehow with my sort of coach, you know, psychology head on, whenever I watch you race, you are always smiling and you love what you do. And I just think that's perhaps, you know, been a huge part of your great success in Ironman racing.
Oh, and undoubtedly. And, I actually only had 2.5 years as a full-time athlete, but I raced professionally for, I don't know, eight years or so. And when I went back to work at the end of 2016, I thought I'd finished triathlon, but then I realized I loved it so much. And that's why I carried on. And, you know, I think I won another eight Ironmans or something, and, you know, since going back to work. So it was undoubtedly that I loved it, but I did also do a lot of work around sports psychology, so that, you know, not every race, you wouldn't always, you know, the week before a race be in the right mindset. So I did a lot of sports psychology work about how to get myself in that right mindset, so that on race day, I was in a mental place. I never pretended it, but sometimes I might have to work to get myself in that place. Does that make sense?
It makes makes total sense. And I think the great thing about the Her Spirit app is that, you know, people can come into the community and learn so much more about triathlon. And unfortunately, like, Leeds has been cancelled and London has, but, you know, Mel Berry had a whole group of triathletes, as she did at London Triathlon last year, who'd started from nothing and got themselves ready to go and race. And a lot of brilliant women went out and did that last year. And hopefully, when we find out more about the dates, there will be some new dates, and the wonderful wonderful crew that Mel's put together will be able to get that opportunity. But that's a great resource of, you know, that Her Spirit has for people.
I just want to ask a little bit about, you said it took me courage and I would only go if he was going. So, you know, a lot of people find sport slash exercise slash triathlon really intimidating, Lucy. And it's kind of interesting to hear you admit to that. So how do we jump over? How do we get over those hurdles, do you think?
Oh God, I still find it, and people will think this is ridiculous, but I joined a running club when I turned up in Nottingham, and I was so nervous about turning up at a new running club, which is bonkers. Like, what do I have to be nervous about? But I was, and I'd still be intimidated, you know, doing a race on Zwift. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I shouldn't be doing that. I don't know that I have any answers. I think finding someone who, you know, everyone's generally really friendly. I've never met anyone in a club who's not really friendly. Other than sometimes swimming clubs, they can be a bit off sometimes about lane etiquettes.
Can I ask you also about your, because one of the reasons that I have loved what I've been doing over the last 6 years, you know, is the mental health aspect. And literally, and I can see you kind of glowing. I know you've been on a run today. Every single run, bike ride makes me feel a little bit better. You have a really stressful job. Is that part of it? It helps you to cope with that?
Yeah. And I think I've realized, you know, I'm not racing professionally anymore, but I will always exercise, and it does me, you know, I said this morning, I was having a bit of a low day and I was quite daunted about what's coming up in the next few months. And you just go on a run and you can just switch off and, you know, it doesn't have to be a run. It could be a walk in the countryside or whatever makes you tick. And I find actually running, I was running to and from work and, you know, I'd leave work and it was dark and it was raining a lot in January and it was the last thing I wanted to do. But actually, you get home 45 minutes later and my head was clear. So it's so important for me, for mental health anyway. And I think a lot of people who don't exercise would probably benefit from it mentally as much as physically.
Just got a little question to ask you, Lucy. Do you want to talk us through your indoor loo roll challenge?
I wanted to ask that.
Have you tried it?
No, I'm going to.
So this will be about, it'll be about 1.5 to 2 minutes of high intensity exercise. It combines skill, it combines physical talent. You have to be able to throw. It was just, we were, you know, 5K Your Way Move Against Cancer, for people who don't know, is a initiative I set up encouraging people living with and after cancer to walk, jog, run, cheer or volunteer at park runs on the last Saturday of every month. And obviously that's on hold probably for, you know, 6 months or so, I'd imagine. But we've got a great community and I just wanted to do some stuff to keep our community together and create some content to, you know, to maybe drive people towards our community as well. So me and Tom, who I live with, just came up with this idea and we did it. And it's, I don't know how many views, I think 40,000 views or something. So
you can use loo rolls, you can use tins, you could use whatever you like. And you put one on each step of your stairs if you've got them.
Yeah. So take out the loo roll. Probably no one's got 10 loo rolls anymore. Take 10 pairs of socks. So you have
probably got socks.
10 pairs of socks, one on each step, and 10 tins, one on each step. And you have a laundry basket at the top and you have to run up to the first pair of socks, throw it in the laundry basket, run down to the bottom, run up to the second pair of socks, throw it in the bottom, and do that for 10 pairs of socks. And then with the tins, you run up to the top, take the tin down to the bottom, run up top, take the tin down, and you have to build a tower with your tins. It's really good. So it's high heart rate. It's a bit of skill because you have to throw. You have to be coordinated at the bottom. It's hilarious. Try it.
And you know what else you could do? I was just thinking is, like, you know, if you're lucky enough to have lots of stairs, is you can lunge up the stairs. You could alternate sprinting up the stairs and like three steps at a time, so you can work your butt as well.
Well, it's, yeah, and it's high. You know, we've got at least 12 weeks of this, so you do it once a week, you can see improvement. It's very tangible, so you get a time and then you get a point for each pair of socks that you throw in the laundry basket.
And where can people find out about that?
We go on her. I've been on your Twitter and found it.
Yeah, it's on Twitter. I'm at Lucy Goss or at Cancer 5K Your Way. I'll give you a link for the show notes.
I don't even know if we have show notes, but we'll have to.
What I'd love is to see your videos of you all doing it, though. I think that would be great with the kids, because your kids would probably beat you.
Yeah, they definitely will. And final question, because we're going to let you go, because you'll need to get ready for your when you're returning to work. Sarah W, and we asked this to Deborah as well, asked us all, what new thing have you done since the stay-at-home regime was enforced?
We have planted some stuff in the garden, actually. So we've got some carrots and some lettuce and some beetroot and some cabbages. So if the apocalypse comes, we're ready.
I planted some lettuces yesterday, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know how long they're going to take. But yeah, you're right. We might be released by the time they grow.
And I tell you what, I've actually done a lot because, yeah, I'm really not a very tidy person. And I'm not very good at doing nothing. And I have been trying not to work because I think I'll need my mental energy. So I've cleaned my car. I've cleaned all my bikes. I wish I had another 10 bikes to clean. I've done every single bit of cleaning that I, you know, I've been meaning to clean my car for the last... Well, I've been meaning to take it to get cleaned for about 3 years. So there's a few good things that come out of it.
Can I send my bike to you to be cleaned?
Oh, please. Well, I won't have time next week. My holiday's almost used up.
No, listen, it's absolutely wonderful to speak to you. I know you've got really pretty daunting, as you say, a few months ahead, and we really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Annie, what do you want to say?
Should we send her a hug? Massive big fan of Lucy, a very, very cool chick that just takes it all in her stride. And, you know, when I meet people like Lucy that I think, wow, she's so talented, but also such a brain box and just take, you know, those people that are so understated, you'd have no idea if you sat there and had a chat with her, you know, in a coffee shop and you didn't really know her. You couldn't imagine, you know, what goes on, you know, in her life. So, you know, I'm a massive fan of yours, Lucy. You're a cool chick.
Oh, you're too kind.
I feel that. So just for people who are listening, Lucy and I did both Patagon Man and Norseman. So we raced... I'm not going to say together. We raced in the same races once in Chile.
We had some cool ferry trips.
Oh, didn't we? We jumped off ferries together. I mean, it was, you know, I just look back on those days actually with a bit of perspective and think, how lucky was I to, you know, jump off the back of that ferry in Norway with you, in Patagonia as well. You know, we've got all those memories are banked and we'll all have them in all our own different way, weren't they? But won't we? But it was just, you know, we've lived extraordinary lives, or certainly I feel very lucky to have done some incredible things.
And if nothing else, coronavirus is helping us all realise we only get one shot at life. And I think that's a real take home that is a positive. And everyone in the country is evaluating how they're living their lives and whether they want to make changes. And that, honestly, I think that is such a big positive coming out of this. So we'll have many more adventures.
Yeah, exactly. I know for sure I really want to race with you. Husband Dave will come, he'll look after us, and he'll buy us Pisco Sours again.
Oh, yes.
And we'll
excellent.
Be fine. Oh, take care, Lucy. Best of luck over the next few months.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.
Hi, I'm Annie Emerson, your co-host with Louise Minchin, and we really hope you enjoyed today's podcast with us. Today's podcast would not have been possible without the support of MediChecks. MediChecks offer simple-to-use blood tests, wanting to strengthen your immunity or check for underlying conditions. We offer at-home tests with doctor-reviewed results. Visit MediChecks.com to find out more.